This is Peace Talks Radio, the nonpartisan, nonpolitical series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution that focuses primarily on the search for inner peace and learning how we can interact with each other to reduce conflict, one-on-one or in groups. We also spotlight the work of peacemakers from throughout history and those doing the good work today. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls, and today we'll meet Paul Ray, an artist, philosopher, and creator of a special Peace Prize to celebrate the peace work of others. First, though, a conversation with a religious scholar and author who's been studying the commonalities between diverse religious traditions for years. It's Will Keepin, who in 2016 published the book Belonging to God, Science, Spirituality, and a Universal Path of Divine Love.
Well, what I would like to say is that, first of all, we need to recognize that the tainting of Islam as a religion of evil is basically a kind of propaganda that is very similar to what happened with Judaism in Germany in the 1930s. You know, Judaism was part of the fabric of German society up until through the 20s, and it is again now. But it had this period where it was identified as the evil within and then completely demonized. And this is very easy to do, particularly with a religion that one knows nothing about. And Americans and Westerners know very little about Islam. So it's easy to pick out a problematic verse from the scripture and then put it together with some heinous acts and then dismiss the entire religion as evil. One could do the same with Christianity, for example. One could choose a couple, especially with a population that knew nothing about Christianity, you could pick a couple verses from Jesus' sayings. One of them, he says at one point, "I come not to bring peace, but a sword," you know, to set father at conflict with son and mother with daughter. So he's bringing this sword. And then you would look at, you know, the Crusades and the Holocaust, which was perpetrated by Christian nations, and perhaps apartheid, which was justified by Christianity. So you can look at some of these things and say, well, clearly it is a religion of evil. Jesus said he was bringing a sword, and look how it's been manifest in Christian religions. And then stop there, and your case is closed. But, of course, we know, you and I know, that it's far more profound than that, far more detailed than that. And even the meaning of that verse gets twisted. So that can be done with any scripture and any people. The scripture can be text twisted really to justify any position. So the first thing I want to help people understand is that this is part of a campaign of sort of a political challenge that's now happening between Islam and Western countries. The second thing that I would try to help people understand is somewhat of the extent to which the West has imposed its values on other cultures. And this has created a lot of pressure and pushback, really, from many nations across the globe. And so part of what our role is now is to learn how to be a nation among nations rather than a nation that is essentially trying to rule the world culturally. And I think that's an important place that we are still in the process of learning.
This is a tall order, this question I'm going to place now, so I offer it with respect. But when you watch the news of the day and you see the trends that have developed, that's why I mentioned this, what would you tell a diplomat? Is there anything specific that you would tell people that would be charged to engage in solutions to ISIS, to the threat of terrorism, that anyway specifically differ from your overall message of we have to understand deeply all of this before we charge in to try to fix it?
Well, as you said, it's a tall order, and yeah, it's not my area of expertise.
So I'm just wondering, though, I could imagine you've written this book, you speak about this all the time, then you maybe flip on the news or read the paper or whatever, there must be some sort of visceral feeling that you have about, gosh, if we could only just.
Yes, I mean,
how does that feel day to day? And is there anything else that you know, find yourself wishing? I wish that they would take this path because I think that we could do better.
You know, I started working on this book, as you know, and the work in the book, you know, over 3 decades ago. So my passion and reason for writing this book predates even the Twin Towers, much less this whole conflict with Islam. My reason for writing this book is to really articulate what I think is the highest and most noble of the human endeavors, and that is the spiritual or mystical journey to unite and become one with God, as it's described in the Western traditions. And so if I were to give a wish, I wish that more people would enter truly and fully onto that spiritual journey, which transforms the human being from kind of an ordinary egoic consciousness, as you mentioned earlier, into an instrument of love and wisdom. That's extremely rare now, as it was in Jesus's time. It's not much more common now than it was then. But that, to me, is the ultimate solution to the human dilemma. And that's the real reason I wrote the book. Then in the last, 10, 15 years, this Islamophobia has emerged. And Islam has been targeted as sort of seemingly the enemy of the West in some way. But I think this is largely created by political and economic forces. And then the religion has become a kind of a battlefield that is co-opted. That's my personal feeling. I mean, it'd be similar to, for example, science. You could also show that science is evil if you, for example, simply said that, physics gave us nuclear weapons, chemistry gave us, the gas chamber, biology gave us anthrax and germ warfare, therefore science is evil. It's that shallow, I think, the current discourse. We have to look at the full picture, because clearly science is given profound gifts. And so I don't really have an answer to the current thing and situation with ISIS. I'm not politically informed or sophisticated enough to know exactly what's going on. The one thing I do feel is that if we allow ourselves to be persuaded by the anti-Islamic rhetoric, then we're falling inadvertently and unwittingly right into ISIS's hands, because it is a small handful of Muslims, and they can't do that much unless they leverage their hatred. And by engaging millions into believing some of this is anti-Islamic rhetoric, if we start to believe that rather than really look into the truth about this religion, then we are actually inadvertently an instrument for their campaign, because ISIS also hates ordinary Muslims. They're very much against ordinary Muslims, loving, peace-loving Muslims, because they don't share their agenda. And they regard such Muslims as apostates, as basically traitors. And so it's very important for us to recognize that we must not allow ourselves to play into that game and become inadvertent, supporters of ISIS's agenda by buying into this anti-Islamic propaganda, anti-Muslim propaganda.
I grew up in a Catholic tradition, disconnected from that while in college, mm-hmm. probably held on to and prayed to a Lord God for another 10 years, but eventually landed in what's probably more accurately described as a bit of an agnostic camp. Mm-hmm. Seems like any concept of creation and universal force or God is plausible to me, but knowing firmly that anyone could be right seems a bit futile. So then I guess I focus on trying to live from the heart space that seems supported by most religions. And I think, when you fill out those guides on the internet that say spiritual but not religious, that a lot of people listening fall into those camps, I think. So speak to the agnostic in me or in our audience or even the atheist to suggest, what's the point of this deep study of how religious texts describe their God and humans' ideal relation to God?
Well, thank you for that question. I think it's true. There's been a lot of critique of religion and in the last 10, 15 years. And there's a new atheism that's arising that's rooted in science. And part of the reason I wrote this book is because I feel like that's a false association. There's nothing scientific about atheism, particularly. As I see it, science and spirituality address completely different domains. Science addresses the world of matter and energy and their interaction in the physical universe, and spirituality addresses the more intangible questions of life of who are we, why are we here, where are we headed, what's our purpose. And part of the reason I wrote this book was because I see a grand synthesis of science and spirituality trying to emerge. What I would say about the atheist question is that I was also trained as a scientist, and so with that came an automatic atheism. It's kind of in the curriculum without one's being made explicit. Let's put it that way. It's not made explicit. And so my spiritual journey then evolved on my own inwardly. And then I found that I needed to understand what is it that the religions are really trying to teach and what is it they have in common. And what I came to was a very remarkable parallel between Einstein's relativity theory and the universal path of love across the religions. About 100 years ago, there was this major revolution in physics. One branch of it was the relativity theory, in which Einstein basically developed his theory based on two postulates. One is that the laws of physics should be the same in all frames of reference, so they shouldn't vary depending on where you are or how fast you're moving, basically. Mm. And the second one was that light, the speed of light, is the same in all frames of reference. There's, the speed of light is universal. And out of that came his whole revolutionary idea of relativity theory, and this showed that space and time are not absolutes. So what seemingly are unchanging eternal absolutes, such as time and its rate of passage, and space, which we think of as sort of empty and permanent and unchanging, turn out that that's not the case. They are not as it appears. And so I applied this same idea to religions, with the borrowing those two postulates and saying that the laws of spirituality should be the same in all religions. What's ultimately spiritually true should hold true in different religions. Mm. And secondly, that light, in this case divine light, whatever that spiritual light is, should have the function the same way in different religions. And it turns out if you explore the scriptures and the mystics of the different traditions, indeed that appears to be the case, that the process of the light, Jesus, for example, in the Christian tradition, he said, "I am the light of the world." But he also said, "You are the light of the world." And the whole spiritual journey in the Christian context is that transformation of the individual soul from being a separate, separated egoic self to actually becoming a living part of the divine light that Jesus was. And so in that same way, we see a similar transformation in the other religions, where the human being becomes an instrument for the divine light. And it's, they use different metaphors in different religions, but that process of being transformed from essentially human darkness into an instrument of divine light is there across all the traditions. When I saw that, I thought this closely parallels what Einstein was speaking about. And it seemed to me then that there could be a similar kind of awakening within spirituality, that there is a universality across the religions. That is the whole point of religions in the first place, this transformation of the human kind of unconsciousness into a being of conscious light, and that that is the same across the different religions. That was very inspiring to me, and it kind of led me to begin really contemplating how science could shed light on this universal truth across the religions.
You can hear quite a bit more our complete conversation with religious scholar and author Will Keepin at our website, peacetalksradio.com. You'll also find a link there to his 2016 book, Belonging to God, Science, Spirituality, and a Universal Path of Divine Love. Next, though, an artist and author called Paul Ray. Paul Ray is best known for his book, The Dance of the Pencil, Serene Art by Paul Ray. Also for his traveling exhibit of touchable art for the blind and sighted, and for the Paul Bartlett Ray Peace Prize, administered by the University of New Mexico Foundation. And full disclosure here, Peace Talks Radio's twice been awarded the Paul Ray Peace Prize. Now, there was no quid pro quo in us inviting him on the show now. We just wanted to learn more about him, his devotion to peace, and his 2016 book, Art, Peace, and Transcendence, Rayograms That Elevate and Unite. You can follow a link from our website, peacetalksradio.com, to see examples of Paul Ray's hand and hand-to-digital swooping and flowing art. Suzanne Kreider interviewed Paul Ray in 2017.
My works first are all derived from closed curves, and these closed curves represent the interconnectedness of everything in creation, from the scale of the complete universe down to the subatomic. And they symbolize the peaceful interaction of human beings, the interconnectedness of everything in ecology. And those closed curves are just telling us that everything in existence is so entwined. And when we do something here in our own space, it affects everything else, and vice versa. So that intertwining of everything, that feeling connected to all of nature and all of the universe, is what my artwork is symbolizing. It's like a mantra, or a visual mantra, or a mandala, which is sort of a visualization of the whole universe and used as an aid in meditation. So there are many people who do use my artworks as visual mantras. Many people start their day studying the artworks, their very subtle symmetries and the soothing qualities of them, and they use them as the basis for their morning meditation. I've had some very, very moving letters from people, different states, different countries, and it feels very, very good to me. And so when I do my own meditation, I'm sending out good thoughts to everyone else. So it is just this feeling of great interconnectedness to everything. And in fact, scientifically, there's much foundation for that, since the whole universe emerged from the Big Bang. If you do astronomical observations, we find that galaxies are moving away from us. And the further away that they are from us, the faster they're moving. And if you reverse that in time, you come to the conclusion that the whole universe emerged from a point singularity. And that should be something that everyone can just remember. You know, we all came from the single point. That's an incredibly beautiful scientific and mathematical thing. It's also a very spiritual thing. And so when people are behaving in ways that we would say were not ideal, if we can remember they too came from the Big Bang, and we're all children of the Big Bang, that unites us all, that helps us all to try and get along. And there's just this beautiful, beautiful interconnectedness of everything. And if we could just focus on that great beauty and that great harmony, that life could be the joyful experience that spirit really wants us to have.
There's a quote in your book, Art, Peace, and Transcendence. I'd like you to explain. It goes like this. When we thoroughly integrate peace into all our thoughts and actions, our lives become works of art.
Yes, the art is not just something you do on paper or on a canvas. Art is everything we do in life. When we do it with grace, when we do it with harmony, when we do it with a feeling of kindness and forgiveness if necessary, whatever is required by the situation.
Basically. Does that mean like this interview can be a work of art?
Oh, yes, certainly. Absolutely everything.
Oh.
Everything we do is a work of art. Yes, yes, yes. Everything we do, even the things that seem like terrible chores, if we can see them as an opportunity to communicate with the universe, and to really enjoy it, because we're supposed to enjoy everything. We really are. And I keep going back to that feeling I had as a very young child, just that feeling of joy. And like when I'm walking down the sidewalk, my feet almost don't reach the ground. And yet I've been through my share of trials and tribulations, certainly. But still, I know that it's that joy that really endures. That is what life is really all about, what we're all seeking, something we can really live for, that we can be part of, that we can feel that we are creating with it.
If I flipped this quote and said, we don't thoroughly integrate peace into our thoughts and actions, our lives do not become works of art. How have you seen that to be true?
Well, unfortunately, I have seen it quite often. I think when people are forgetting their connection to the infinite, I think the whole problem in life comes from forgetfulness, really. We need to remember who we are. We're children of the Big Bang. We're children of spirit. And if that's true, then how should we behave? And if it's also true, it means that we have all of that spirit behind us, helping us, and we can draw on it. And it will flow through us. Joy is a river that wants to flow through us, is one of my poems. And life wants people to enjoy life. That's what we're here for. We're supposed to enjoy it. And so let's do it.
Paul Ray, you've made touchable art for people who are not sighted. So what is your connection to people who are blind?
Okay, another little story from when I was young. I think I was 6 or 7. I went barefoot a lot, and I would blindfold myself, and I would walk around the house, and just from what my feet were touching, figure out where I was. And then I would go outside and I would walk all around outside, blindfolded. And it was really quite an experience. I can tell you about it, but you really have to experience it. I mean, try it. It's really quite fun. Mm. And just see what you can figure out about the world just through your feet. And I had read right around that time, Helen Keller's book, I think it was called The World I Live In. It had moved me very greatly. And in doing that little experiment, I thought, well, you know, maybe someday I'll work with the blind in some way. And so it turns out in about 1980, I was looking at a sheet of basic shapes from an article I'd written for Leonardo, which is an international archival art journal which bridges art, science, and technology. And that sheet of basic shapes showed the internal contours of 60 drawings and paintings of mine, all derived from closed curves. And I had the feeling that those line drawings could be translated into embossings that would be meaningful to the blind. So I then set about figuring out how to do that technically. Ended up doing it vacuum or and pressure thermoforming on a mold that I had made. It partly out of masonite and wires of various thicknesses and various other materials to give textures. Then I sent it around to various blind persons around the country and found quite a number of quite excellent testers, and particularly right here in New Mexico. And they gave me some very good feedback, and I felt that indeed there was a call for this. There would be a place for it. So I made a traveling exhibit of these, and then that has been all around the country and into Canada 18 times, and it was very, very moving, the response that I received from both blind and sighted, because we would have sighted persons be blindfolded and then go and feel it and then come back and try and draw the works. And we also did that with blind persons, and it was a great learning exercise. I did many different kinds of workshops with it, and everyone works together, and it's really a very, very beautiful bridging between the blind and sighted.
Mm. Paul Ray, read your poem, Bridging to Peace.
Very good. Bridging to Peace. My life has been a journey of bridging art and science, east and west, the worlds of the blind and sighted, humankind with nature, and most basically, a bridging to the serenity deep within me. Continuing this journey, may my art help others to nurture their tranquil center, and may they then build bridges spreading outward from their inner harmony to a global peace.
Does everybody have a tranquil center?
Yes, I believe everyone does, although many are very, very obscured and covered up. I believe it's there within everyone. But we have to remove the baggage of our lives and ages and all the bad habits and so forth. And in doing that, it reveals that center which is in everyone and which connects us all, let's say, back to the Big Bang. It's there in everyone, and some people may have a lot more challenge in finding it, but it is there. So basically, if we can just see that incredible oneness that pervades everything, if we can just keep trying to nurture it, and even in directions where it seems like there's very little hope, just keep sending it there, and eventually, when we are least expecting it, there can be some very beautiful little elements of surprise and hope.
You can head to our website, peacetalksradio.com, for so much more. A link to our longer conversation with Paul Ray about his artwork and philosophies and his latest book, Art, Peace, and Transcendence. Also, you can hear more from our earlier guest, author and religious scholar Will Keepin. All at our website, peacetalksradio.com. It's where you can hear every show in the Peace Talks Radio series going back to 2002. Photos, audio downloads, there's a link to iTunes to subscribe to our podcast. You can sign up for a monthly newsletter there, and it's also where you can make a tax-deductible contribution to the nonprofit media organization Good Radio Shows Incorporated that produces Peace Talks Radio separate and apart from your public radio station. So that's peacetalksradio.com to help. Support also comes from the McCune Charitable Foundation of New Mexico, KUNM at the University of New Mexico, and a Spinal Health and Movement Center and Ruben Ramirez in Albuquerque's Nob Hill neighborhood. Nola Daves Moses is our executive director. Ali Adelman composed and performs our theme music. For Suzanne Kreider, I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks so much for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.